From the Moen Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn. On today's show, we remember Harold Prince, the musical theater giant who has died at the age of 91. Then Diallo Riddle and Bashir Salahuddin went from writing for late night to creating their own show that blends music and comedy.
Can I say one of the things that excites me and this guy, Bashir, the most is the chance to invent lore. Yeah. I always say that this show was really our chance to do the Marvel Cinematic Universe of black music. So not only have we created lore around Sherman Showcase, the fake show within a show, but we've also created backstories for all of our musical guests.
All that coming up on The Frame. News comes today that Broadway director and producer Harold Prince is dead at the age of 91. According to a statement, the musical theater giant died in Reykjavik, Iceland, after a short illness. A prolific producer, Prince had his hands sculpting some of the most endearing and enduring musical classics, including West Side Story, Sweeney Todd, and Fiddler on the Roof. Jesse Green is the co-chief theater critic at the New York Times, and he joined me to talk about Harold Prince and his career in musical theater. I started out by playing him a little bit of a tune you might have heard before from West Side Story.
Well, Prince began as a stage manager and a producer, not as part of the creative team of these shows. It's important to the rest of his career that he knew how to put shows on, and not just how to artistically lead them. And in West Side Story and some of the early shows, we're seeing more a matter of his taste, which was different from the taste of a lot of the people working at the time, than we are seeing his artistic vision, which came into play a little bit later.
The modern musical can be very political and have a strong point of view. I'm thinking of maybe Hamilton, or it can be kind of apolitical and completely bland, like Disney's Beauty and the Beast. What was Harold Prince's bias?
Well, he was certainly interested in talking about the real world within the theater. He was, and not only talking about it, but bringing that to the forefront. So a typical thing that Hal Prince show would do would be to invert the usual way you would get information. In the great musicals of the golden age of Broadway, you would typically get a story with characters that suggested a theme. What Prince and his collaborators started to do in the 70s in particular is to flip that and begin with the theme and then fit the characters and plot around it. So often you get these what are called concept musicals that don't even have very much of a plot, and some people would say even characters, but have these very powerful themes that people related to. An example would be Company, where the theme is marriage, and you don't even really know exactly what's going on for most of the show.
I'm going to play a clip from Company. This is Elaine Stritch singing Here's to the Ladies Who Lunch.
Here's to the girls who stay smart, aren't they a guest? Rushing to their classes.
So what was his reputation in terms of working with actors like Elaine Stritch?
Well, he was known as a pretty good disciplinarian, I'll say that much, which you had to be if you were going to work with Elaine Stritch and the kinds of people that he chose to cast. And that came from the fact that he had been a producer and often was the producer of his own shows. So he had double clout with him whenever he went into that rehearsal room.
I want to play a clip from a New York Times interview with Prince that you have up on your site now. This is him talking about the aftermath of a nervous breakdown in his youth.
I came to my parents and said, I think there's something really wrong. There's just a black cloud over everything. And within a space of about 3 months, it began to go away. The legacy of it was that I came out of it a different person, extremely ambitious. I wanted what I wanted, and I was going to get it.
I can't help but think of another contemporary Broadway producer, Scott Rudin, right now, who is equally driven. Was he really that driven? Was he, I guess, somebody who would never take no for an answer?
He certainly was driven, but he actually was terrifically enthusiastic and generally very positive. I actually was his apprentice at one point in the 80s, and I got to see him at work, and I never saw him fall into those funks that most artists do. There was always more work to be done on the current project, but more than that, he would have 2, 3, 4, 5 other projects, you know, in various states of readiness, as you say, Scott Rudin does too, to move on to should anything happen to this one. it was kind of an obsession.
He worked on Broadway through a couple of different time periods, one where Broadway was doing really well, and then where it went through its seedy period, and then kind of the cleanup and the Disneyfication of Broadway. I want to play something from a show that maybe a lot of people don't know about, a great show called Parade that he staged in 1998.
I go to fight.
So how did he adapt to the changes in Broadway, and do you think he leaves a legacy behind?
I don't think he adapted that much from the beginning of his producing career and then into his early directing works and then all the way through to Parade and a little bit after that. He stuck to his guns. He was going to talk about serious things. Parade is about the Leo Frank case and a lynching, and he was going to do it in the way that he felt was most expressive. And I think to the extent that there's a legacy, I do think there's a legacy, it's partly that, the unvarnished seriousness of what he thought the musical was fully capable of understanding and presenting to an audience.
And obviously he won a ton of Tonys, but he also had great commercial sense. And I think, is Phantom of the Opera still running? I believe it started during the Truman presidency. He also had some real big hit shows like Phantom of the Opera.
He was a huge success and he made a lot of money. He had periods where there were flop after flop. There's no getting around that. But then there would come a Phantom and so he could get investors for the next one as well. I don't think a career like that can happen anymore.
Jesse Green is the co-chief theater critic of the New York Times. Jesse, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your thoughts about Harold Prince.
My pleasure, John.
And just one more note about Harold Prince. He directed several shows for the Center Theater Group here in Los Angeles, including The Phantom of the Opera. It opened at the Amundsen Theater in May of 1989 and was moved to what was then called the Doolittle Theater in Hollywood, where it ran until August of 1993. That four-year run is the longest in CTG history. Coming up on The Frame, what exactly is the new TV comedy sketch series Sherman Showcase? Think of it as Soul Train gone off the rails. Is it music or comedy, a variety show or a documentary? Diallo Riddle and Bashir Salahuddin hope it's clear that their new sketch show, Sherman Showcase, is all of those things. They spent 4 years as writers on Late Night with Jimmy Fallon, but Diallo and Bashir became friends while in singing groups in college. It wasn't until they moved to Los Angeles and got their first jobs in the music industry that they realized they needed to do something different.
Diallo was working for a record label. I was working for Warner Brothers. I was a PA, still acting and writing, and he still hadn't begun. But both of us realized quickly the limitations of employment. And so we also realized that if we were really going to achieve our dreams, we had to take some swings. And so I ended up leaving the PA job and trying just to act. And he was doing that also. And then we were both in two different sketch comedy troupes, still friends, by the way. But then it was sort of obvious, like, wait a second, why are we doing that? That makes no sense. We literally spent all our time together hanging out, trying to make jokes. Why not commit them to paper and like...
Yeah. We were actually members of separate sketch groups. So we had both become very fed up with the roles that we were given. We were both the pretty much the only black guy in all white sketch groups. We were both living that life. And one day we came to the realization that, you know, they were always making me the co-pilot.
And I was
always
making the chef.
Bashir the chef.
I'm like, this sketch is about...
We can do more than that, guys.
It's about life on the moon. Why is there a chef in the... In a full chef outfit.
Okay, so we're all space marines, and Bashir, you're Cookie. And oh, man, this is going to be excellent.
You're going to dispense sage advice before we go on missing.
You're going to help me out with my love life. It's going to be amazing.
So when you're working together and writing together, what is the first job that you get together and you come in, like, you got to take both of us together? Do you come in as...
Well, no. You know, we took our lives into our own hands. Totally. We left those sketch groups and we wrote our own sketch group along with some other like-minded individuals, mm-hmm. some other black players that we had sort of met on the scene. Both. And we were actually really proud of the fact that, like, in that original sketch group of six, there's so many people who've gone on to bigger and better things. And just to sort of fast forward through what happened was that we got on the radar of David Alan Greer, who gave us our first gig in TV as comedy writers. Rogers, Me and This Guy.
Yep.
Right after that, Jimmy Fallon reached out to us, and we went to work for Jimmy Fallon for 4 years. And like Bashir often says, that was our graduate school of sketch comedy. Totally. When you work on a daily show that has to be complete by a certain time to air on NBC, you learn pretty quickly, hey, you know, this is prime time.
I mean, it was really the first time we met stakes. Before that, we were baby writers or something. You know, you go, hey, I'm going between jobs. Some days I'm a baby writer. Some days I'm a waiter. It literally, it's that line. And then you get to the point where like, no.
Sometimes I'm hawking sweaters.
Sometimes I'm hawking
Banana
sweaters
Republic.
At the Palladium. And you just feel like, well, look, well, hold on now. If we do well here, we get to stay with this job title. And I think it was really important for us. But also, to his credit, Jimmy Fallon was so focused on success. And we all worked our ass off. I mean, we were putting in 18, 20 hour days. This is 3-4 months before the show came out. It was a 13-week contract. Like, we literally took everything we had, moved from LA to New York, and we said, this really could just be for 13 weeks. But the pressure ended up being good for us, and we rose to the occasion. A year later, a year and a half later, we had an Emmy nomination, you know, for that show. So it really felt like we were a bunch of kids who didn't know what the hell we were doing, and we just all figured it out together. And I think that's been so valuable.
Yeah.
So the show is successful. You guys get to do work on it. And after a couple of years, do you realize that there are limitations to what you can and cannot do?
There are two types of writers. There are lifers, and then there are guys like us who are like, you know what? We're going to try to do our own thing. We started our career making our own stuff. Let's see what happens now that we have all this training.
We went off to write a show about my hometown and at HBO.
Mm-hmm.
But then after about 4 years and 2 months, we had shot two pilots there. We had been there for 3 different presidents of the network. And then the next administration was basically like, hey, you know, we like you guys, but we don't think we've nailed this.
It's so dark that we have to laugh at it. And I think that's helped us to laugh at it. But it is pretty horrible when you're like calling your grandmother up and like, hey, Nana, remember how I went to Harvard and I took a swing and then went to Hollywood? It worked. And then you got to call back like, hey, so how you doing? What do you have for breakfast? You sitting down? We should talk. And it did. Remember how I said it worked? So it was tough, but then we kind of switched gears. And
yeah, well, here's the upswing. After a defeat like that, we actually just took out 2 ideas that we 100% believed in. We were like, if the networks say no to this, then they be damned because we
they're
believe,
the wrong network.
And thankfully, both networks said yes. We took Southside to Comedy Central.
Only.
It was, you know, based on, you know, a lot of experiences that Bashir's family and friends had experienced in Chicago. And we went to IFC where we had seen an episode of Documentary Now. And we felt like, you know what, if they can do half an hour about
a
Stop
chicken.
Making Sense.
Yeah.
or Andre Likes Chicken. Yeah, great episode. But they did an episode about Stop Making Sense, which is one of my favorite albums of all time. And I watched the entire episode. And Bashir and I decided if they can do half an hour on that, they can do limited run on Black music. Now, hopefully, it won't be a limited run. I think in writing this show, Sherman Showcase, we've decided that, you know, there are many seasons of characters. And, I one thing that I take a lot of pleasure in is the fact that we still come together as writers sometimes, and we're capable of creating things that are very different, but have sort of a through line. And I think that, you know, whether it's Sherman Showcase or Southside, we have created shows that I think put us in a you know,
whether it's
Franken and Davis or Rowan and Martin, you know, we're part of a proud tradition of guys who can create television.
We're talking with Diallo Riddle and Bashir Salahuddin about their sketch comedy show, Sherman's Showcase. What would you say the through line is between Sherman Showcase and Southside?
You know, coming from a blue collar background, both of us do, from working class families, you know, humor is necessary. Particularly almost sometimes a gallows humor when you deal with certain realities. And so I have always...
Which realities might those be?
Oh, you know, life on the South Side.
I haven't been watching the news for a couple of years.
I was just
going
to say that, like, I feel so blessed because I think comedy is an ameliorative. I think comedy is something where you can... I think it's a blessing. I think it's a healing. I think it's like when people are at their worst point, if you can make them laugh, if you can make a friend laugh, you've brought light into their life in a way that I think is important and special. And I have a high opinion of that. And so for us, we were doing our show. I said, look, we want to make shows where folk can come home, kick their feet, kind of like A Living Color was for us. You kick your feet up and you just laugh. You laugh so hard. And so The other through line for our work is there's always we can't help it. There's always some commentary. Yeah, even if we don't want it to be, somebody will point out and say like, "Hey man,
it's never been our goal."
The way y'all took down the prison industrial complex was tight. I'm like, did we do that?
But we kind of do, and I think that you know we never want to be polemic because then we think you lose people. Right. I think if anything, we sort of sneak it under the radar, and they're like, "Oh my god, did they just make the third joke about the LAPD in one episode?"
Yeah. You know, both of us will have a sense of humor about it, and I think that comes it goes into the work.
One of the things I love the most about our show is that we usually use something to stand in for something else. And I know in the case of Sherman Showcase, we actually use the city of Glendale.
You sure do.
We use the city of Glendale as a stand in for Hollywood.
For everything.
Specifically for Hollywood.
Yeah.
Because most people, outside of Los Angeles don't really think of Glendale, or if they do, they don't consider
or know
really
it exists.
They don't think of it as a separate entity. But I love the fact that Sherman is very proud of the fact that his studio is right there in the heart of downtown Glendale.
This next lady is 5'11", 130 pounds. She's a special needs teacher here in Glendale and has herself been diagnosed with depression. Here is Hot Pants Addie.
This is a radio show, but I'm going to show you a video, so you got to stay where you are. I'm going to turn my laptop around. We don't do this often, but I have to show you something.
It's time for Dance Fever, starring Denny Terrio.
Eddie Murphy's like, why are you hanging out with Denny Terrio?
This year, competing for cash and prizes worth more than $75,000.
Are you about to say something amazing?
Dance Fever, I think, is a show you might have stumbled upon when you were thinking about Sherman
Showcase. I would go further and say Dance Fever is a show we both know very well. Dance Fever is a show that I think it was a skosh before our time, but I remember watching that growing up. I remember seeing Dance Fever. And so aesthetically, the vibe of that is absolutely something we wanted Sherman Showcase to have.
I want to play you something from the first episode. This is how John Legend describes Sherman Showcase.
For over 40 years, Sherman Showcase has been a revolutionary black music slash dance slash entertainment program unlike anything else on TV. Except for several other shows.
And there's the list.
There is a list that goes by pretty fast, but there's some crazy things on it.
Yeah.
Seinfeld season 5 is on there.
But you have to create two shows, basically. There is the fictional variety show.
Correct.
And then there is the documentary series looking back on the show.
Yes, and can I say one of the things that excites me and this guy, Bashir, the most is the chance to invent lore. Yeah. I always say that this show was really our chance to do the Marvel Cinematic Universe of black music. So not only have we created lore around Sherman Showcase, the fake show within a show, but we've also created backstories for all of our musical guests on the show. Yeah. And let me give you a classic example. Somebody was like, well, where'd you guys come up with this song, Marina Del Rey? Well, once again, like Glendale, we like to show a little bit of light on some of LA's forgotten communities. Let's spend the day.
Favorite part. We sing the songs.
God, you can harmonize.
In Marina Del Rey.
Marina Del Rey. Yeah.
We want the key to the city of Marina Del Rey.
Absolutely.
You will get that. It comes with the key to the city of Glendale.
There it is.
Twofer.
It's like a package.
They're sister cities.
They're in the same plastic packaging. Like.
Next on The Frame, more with Diallo Riddle and Bashir Salahuddin, the creators, writers, and stars of the new IFC sketch comedy series, Sherman Showcase. We pick up our conversation now with Bashir Salahuddin and Diallo Riddle. They're the creators and stars of the new IFC show, Sherman Showcase. It's a mockumentary series about a fictional variety show. Think the old show Solid Gold meeting the new series Documentary Now, and it has really good music. This song, Time Loop, already has been streamed more than 100,000 times on Spotify.
Time Loop, Time Loop.
The multi-talented Diallo Riddle and Bashir Salahuddin write and sing the songs on Sherman Showcase.
You know, we really are nerds, and we really love layered comedy. You know, we're big fans of things that are operating on many levels. So the more your sort of music nerddom goes deep, the more our show gives you. And I think I'm really proud that our show is like, the deeper your love of music is, we can go there with you.
Yeah.
But the songs are funny, but they're also produced. I mean, they could stand alone on their own.
We're smart enough to know how stupid we are. And what I mean by that is, Dial and I are really good at comedy. I think we understand what that process is. We used to work at Fallon. We used to work 20-hour days sometimes. It is a tough process.
It was 18 hours 10 minutes ago.
It'll be 22 in 10 minutes. Let's keep it going.
26 hours.
Here's the deal. 35 hours a day, we were out there working our butts off. We brought all that, but we also got to work with someone like Questlove, and we sort of realized both through him and at the same time that Lonely Island was doing stuff. I remember the first time I heard Lazy Sunday.
Yo, where's the movie play at?
Upper West Side, dude.
Well, let's hit up Yahoo Mastermind, the dopest route.
I prefer Mac Quest.
That's a good one, too.
Google Maps is the best.
True that.
Double true.
And I was like, man, this song goes hard without the comedy lyrics. And so we realized already, if the song is great, it just adds another layer because we love it when the music actually sounds like music. So we went to real musicians who helped us do that. And on the dancer front as well, incredibly tough auditions.
And do you know what it is? When you go to a musician, you just say, we need a song that's going to be... It was, I mean, the Marina del Rey is yacht rock, but you call it big ass boat rock. That you tell them what the place is in the show, what kind of guidance or leeway does the musician have?
Some of the songs, every song came together a little bit differently.
Totally.
I will say that the majority of these songs are original songs, the medley of which came from Bashir and I, because we're just like every other comedian out there. We secretly wanted to be musicians at some point in our lives.
Or even unsecretly.
And you get to be in the band, too.
Yeah, and so, like, you'll send like, the song idea, maybe, like, even, like, hum a few bars of what you think it sounds like to, you know, one of our collaborators, and then they'll send it back. You'll send it back and forth for a little bit, and then eventually you end up with a Marina Del Rey.
How do you know when something's working? Because the conceit of the show within the show is you can comment on what might not be working in the show through the documentary.
Whenever we show something that we think didn't work, our hope is that it's still super duper funny.
Yeah.
And I think more specifically, we don't write something and say, oh, that's not that funny. Oh, but you know what? Let's repurpose it as a bit that doesn't
work.
Everything that's on the show that we go, this didn't work, was actually written as somebody's true intention was that it worked well.
I will admit, with Marina Del Rey, that song wasn't even formulated when the writer's room closed. But I was like, I don't know why it's in the show, and I also don't know if I have a medley to pitch to our collaborators on it. But that's one that literally came together about 3 weeks before we shot it, and I'm super happy that it exists.
But I think we'd also had experience with Fallon, knowing there are things you plan long-term. There are sketches that they take 2 months to produce.
Wow.
They might be great. They might not. There are sketches that he comes in the morning of, or a writer says, oh my God, I had the doofiest idea last night. Let's do this. Sometimes it works, sometimes
it doesn't. Like Slow Jam the News, which we worked on. We did Slow Jam the News with Obama, and that was one of the things where, like, you crank it out, you send it to his people, they come back, they're like, Obama's going to do it. You're like, yeah, I'll believe it when I see it. He comes bouncing into the room.
Now, I know some of the presidential candidates have been critical of my foreign policy. I don't want to name any names.
He's talking about Donald Trump.
You talk to him for 15 minutes. You spend the next 6 years telling people about that 15 minutes, but it's pretty awesome.
Trying to remember everything that happened in that room at that time, really. Because it's one of those few times in life where you go, this is about to be special.
Okay, I'm about to remember this.
So I was watching way too much Danny Terrio earlier today.
Let's keep going back to Dance Fever.
But the one
is
thing
he
I
here
wanted
today?
To...
He's
no,
not
but,
here, is he? Because I feel like he's on Walk-In.
Not just the production design, the costume.
Yeah.
I mean, Danny wore some great outfits, and clearly your costume designer
again, we're trying
and
to...
Time Loop has some amazing costumes.
Okay, let's talk about that.
It's really important to us that the show feel elite. So we think the audience, especially in an environment where there's so many people, deserves our best. Our costume designer, Ariella Walt, is incredible. Yeah. She... on a very, very tight budget, produced miracles. I mean, she was corresponding with random suit makers overseas. She's like, this guy's in Uzbekistan, but he makes jackets, and we can afford them.
She brought in this cigarette ad that had, like, some insane sort of, like, futuristic spacesuits, and we were like, that's what those things should look like.
One of the great marks of a great costume designer, and I would say the same thing for any of the artisans who work in TV and film, I think part of that is collaboration, because they have an idea, and you have an idea. And the goal is that they bring you stuff that's close to within the realm of your vision, and then you could kind of help tweak it and make it. And with her, with the amount of stuff she had to do, she hit the mark so many times.
The music is so good, you're actually releasing the soundtrack, right?
Absolutely. It's coming out on Mad Decent, which is Diplo's label. Because John Legend was involved in this, we absolutely needed to make sure that the music was of a certain quality. Mm. And it's the last 40 years of black music. So if you're a James Brown fan, we've got a song on there that sounds quite a bit like James Brown when he had like the JBs there and Fred Wesley on the horns. You know, like we've got that sound. We've got songs that sound like they were produced by Prince or Morris Day. In fact, Morris Day is one of our guest stars on the show, and he co-signed on these songs. You know, we've got songs from like 90s R&Bs.
Somebody
you know?
Recently described our show as, oh, this is just a really good music show with comedy. And I was like, you know what? I'm kind of with that, actually, because at least that respects like the quality of the music. We're proud of the music on our show.
We're very proud of the music.
It's going to bump in your whip.
Diallo Riddle and Bashir Salahuddin are the creators and stars of the sketch comedy show Sherman Showcase. Diallo and Bashir, thanks so much for coming.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Sherman Showcase premieres tonight on IFC. The soundtrack comes out on August 9th. And before we go, just a note to correct something from yesterday's show. I gave the wrong date for the Los Angeles Latino International Film Festival and the movie The Infiltrators. It starts tonight at the TCL Chinese Theater in Hollywood and continues through Sunday. And that's our show for today. I'm John Horn in the Moan Broadcast Center at KPCC. We'll see you tomorrow.